more importantly, in the often ignored summits and caverns of our adult minds. And I really love that because it speaks to the idea that we need to use our imaginations, even in a place such as an art museum where we tend to look at other people's imaginations, you know, kind of on the walls and in sculpture. It was really nice to see a different perspective at how to look at art. And a little bit about Keith. He is based in Austin and San Francisco. He has an MFA in film production from the Radio TV Film Department at UT Austin, and his films have aired on public and cable television and have been exhibited in galleries, community spaces, and film festivals, including Berlinale, the London Film Festival, South by Southwest, and the National Gallery of Art. Currently, Keith is working on a film about sea cucumbers. One of his most recent projects, a film titled The Shrimp, will be part of the Chicago Short Film Brigade program at the Gene Siskel Film Center in Chicago, with additional screenings in Dubuque, Iowa, and Pepin, Wisconsin. And tonight, Keith is going to present a lecture which focuses on, again, his work with film, photography, and performance. So if you'll please join me in welcoming Keith.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for coming. I want to thank Aaron and everybody at The Modern for having me here. It's really nice to to be able to do a performance and give a lecture at this museum because, as she mentioned, or she actually didn't mention, but I have a history with Fort Worth. I went to TCU, and I got my bachelor's degree there. So I'm familiar with the city and familiar with this museum, so it's really great to be here, so thank you. So tonight, I am mostly, I'm going to talk about my work, and I'm going to show you examples of my work. And I'm actually going to show you mostly my film work. I'm going to start with my film. I'm going to show you some clips and some entire films. And I'm going to talk about my performance and then some ongoing photography stuff that I have. So, just start here. Okay. So, a little bit about me. So, like, I got my degree in history and sociology here at TCU. And I only took one photography class. I didn't identify as an artist. I didn't know that you could even be one. I grew up in the suburbs of Atlanta, and my parents weren't creative or artistic, and no one I knew did that. So I didn't know that this is what you could do. So I decided to go to graduate school for sociology. No one I knew did that either, but I went to graduate school for sociology, and in some ways I'm a failed academic sociologist because I went for a year and I dropped out because I'm not good at statistics, I'm not good at writing papers. And I also am somebody who needs to have their hands in a lot of different things, both mentally and physically. Werner Herzog, who is a film director that many of you may know, he did The Grizzly Man and he did Encounters at the End of the World. And he, one of the things he says about filmmaking is that it's not intellectual and it's not it's not in libraries, you don't research it, but filmmaking is in the thighs. It's like it comes from your thighs. And I really respond to that, and I agree with that, because filmmaking is really hard and it's physical. And but I disagree in that it's not sort of, it can't be intellectual as well. Okay, so where was I? So I went to TCU, a failed sociologist. I moved to California, to San Francisco, and for the first time, I was really exposed to artists and filmmakers and people who identified as that, and like they pursued art and art making and filmmaking. And I took an editing class and I made my first film. Prior to that, I had always like picked up a video camera and used it in whenever the opportunity was given to me in a class. Like I could do it for a paper. If I could write a paper or do a video, I'd always choose to do a video and be wacky, and and I would really enjoy it, and I would put all of my effort into it versus like putting into a paper, and I never would do that. I would never, you know, like want to do that. So the first film I made was called Southern Beauty, And it's about my grandmother's, my great grandmother and my grandmother's weekly trip to the beauty parlor. They're from Atlanta, and they go every Wednesday, whether they need it or not. And I'm going to show you a little clip of this. This is the first film I ever made. and it picks up right when they're getting ready to go to the beauty parlor. And at the time, my great-grandmother was 92, and my grandmother, I believe, was 72. So...
Thank you.
Okay, so that's just a little sample of that. So what happens after that is we go to the Piccadilly cafeteria and have our weekly lunch, and my great-grandma tells us what she calls dirty jokes about a preacher with an erection or something. She likes to tell those types of jokes. So then I was interested in personal documentary. I was interested in documenting my family because it was what I knew and it was what was close to me and it was what I had access to. And I made a film called Southern Family again, it was about my grandmothers because they are incredible Southern women. And, but this film is about my experience coming out to them. And it's 12 minutes and I'm not quite in it, but I'm in the periphery and you can hear me. And like the first one, it's rough, or what I consider to be a little rough and unpolished and very new. And I look, it's funny because I watch these and it's interesting to watch my early work and sort of in some ways I feel like, wow, I wish I still sort of had that spontaneity and sort of not quite knowing what I was doing or knowing any sort of filmmaking rules. But then I also look at it and think, wow, I've really learned a lot. And like, I feel like my work is continuing to progress and get more interesting and engaging and going in directions that I want it to. So I'm not going to show you a clip of this. So then I made a film called Lesbian Grandmothers from Mars because those first two films, they did pretty well. They were in festivals and they were distributed and all of these things, which surprised me. So I thought, well, I'm ready to take on something big. I'm ready to take on something that's not about me. And that is a bigger issue, an issue that I cared about. And this was in 2004 and the George Bush's second election was coming up, and the marriage equality was a big issue, especially where I lived, which was San Francisco. And so I met these women named Carrie and Alicia Ross Stone, and they were from Mars, Pennsylvania, and which makes them lesbian grandmothers from Mars. And they were riding their bicycles across country from San Francisco to New York, making and stopping along the way talking about marriage equality, sort of in the run-up to the election that didn't go the way that they wanted. And I wanted to make a feature film. I thought I was ready. So let me just show you a little bit of that. Again, I'm doing all of this. Oops. Again, I'm doing this all on my own. Like, I don't have a sound person. I don't have a producer. I'm paying for it. It's very lo-fi because I'm sort of, in some ways, like, that's what I've decided to do, but in other ways, and I'm sort of proud of that, and in other ways, I don't know any better. Okay, so I'm just going to show you, and this is just a clip of it, sort of gives you an idea of...
Doesn't recognize the disc.
No. Just put file and send to CD.
Does it do that?
Yeah. Send to... Oh, where is it?
I don't have that. Can't I just do what I was going to do? Okay. Just wait a minute. I'm going to show Ken. Because I have a theory.
It opened a second ago.
I can never remember where the hell this thing is anyway. Carson City, following US 50, and it's taking us to Fallon. It's probably about 30 miles. So that's when I'll switch off with Alicia. She'll follow the same route in the RV.
A little dip, and Fallon's there.
And there's 4 miles from this point to this point.
25, 50, a little over. Maybe 60. 1,850.
And what's that?
11.
Is that average?
I think that's the time. 1,153.
My daughter Katie called to wish me a happy Mother's Day and to ask me how to know if her avocado is rotten. I'm serious. They need me.
Never touched a dog, but they just take one look and they stop in their tracks.
She's a bike hog. She'll keep riding if I don't make her get off. And then, you know, so we can switch off. She's a caretaker, really. She thinks she has to take care of me. It's the truth. I guess it could be worse, or she could care less. I would hate that.
Okay, so this film was a huge learning experience for me because I completely bit off more than I that I could chew, and I also learned that what I didn't want to do, which was to make it just didn't work. The film wasn't as engaging as I wanted it to be. It had structural problems. It was too long. There's parts where the image is just so. I after this film, I decided that I needed help. So I applied to graduate school, which is where Texas came in. So I went to UT Austin and I enrolled in the MFA program. In the radio, TV, film department. And that the program is really great, at least for me, and one of the reasons I chose it is because it has a dual emphasis on documentary and then narrative fiction. So, and I wanted to do both. I didn't want to go to just a documentary program, and I didn't want to go to a I didn't want to go somewhere that just did narrative fiction, Hollywood-style stuff. So, I made a short film there called When the Light's Red, it's about my experience with panhandlers at intersections in Austin. And I'm just going to show you the beginning of that. Yeah, so just I'm going to show you the opening. Actually, before I do. So like I said, I went back to school because I felt like I needed some help. However, as soon as I got to graduate school, we were supposed to make a documentary, and I said, "Wow, I want to make it about homeless people who they call it flying signs, who fly signs at intersections in Austin." And so I started to film it, and I met all these people, and I would go off in the woods where they lived, and I sort of formed a bond with them, and then I got all this footage, and then at some point I realized that it was boring and no one would care, maybe including myself. So I decided I needed to do something different, so I made it from, I went back to my original kernel of the idea of why I even want to do that. It is like my own experience. So I want to, and I decided to tell it from my experience, and the experience that I knew versus trying to tell their stories, because it's already been done. It's been done better than I was going to be able to do it with my resources and my my experience level. So I went back and I made it about me. And by doing that, I feel like it made it about sort of people who were going to view this. Okay. So we're just going to watch the very beginning of this. Recently,
I moved to Austin, Texas. And boy, are there a lot of homeless people.
Ugh. The dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Okay, I'm going to try that again.
Oh, shit.
There's one now.
Come on, light change.
Why are there so many around here? I just want to go home.
He's probably a vet. But how do you know? Every sign I see says that.
I just can't deal with this today.
Is he missing a leg?
Oh, my God. He only has one leg.
When is this light going to fucking change?
I should just give him some change. Shit.
Here, you just shouldn't give him money.
What about my credit card?
All those student loans.
It would suck not having a leg.
I care.
What does this sign say?
That anything helps.
Just don't look at him. Don't look at him. Don't make eye contact.
Here we go. It's about time. Shit.
God, it feels so crappy to just not look at him.
The guy probably makes like 20 bucks an hour.
What would the Buddha do?
I don't have any money to give him.
What would the Buddha do? That is stupid.
Okay, so there's that. and then, so I go on all, essentially, it ends up at the end where, maybe I shouldn't tell you, it's a spoiler alert here, but I basically decide that the most important thing is to just acknowledge the person at my window as a human being versus trying to solve the problem. And in many ways, I feel like I came to that conclusion as of a selfish one to make me feel better about every time I pull up at that light. okay. So all of these films that I'm showing you are just documentary. I've done a lot of experimental film. But this is a document, my documentary work and sort of my evolution of my my filmmaking and my style and what I want to do. My next film is, I was in graduate school and I began questioning what a documentary was and sort of like the basic tenets or some of the things that people take assign to a documentary, and that it's truth and that there's that it's that it's objective, that it's not constructed. And I yeah, I guess I began asking myself those questions as I started to teach students about documentary, and they would sort of make assumptions that documentary was real and that it couldn't be constructed, and the way that you edited it had to be the way that you experienced it. And so I think as I started to realize that I believed those things to be the way that documentary is supposed to be produced. Sorry, I'm not being very articulate. I think because I was just another person for the last hour at this tour. But so, anyways, I began pushing the form, and I wanted to sort of test the limits of what a documentary was, and what it was in terms of my subjects and how they participated in it and how I constructed it. So we're just going to watch. We're actually going to watch this whole piece. It's 7 minutes long, and it's called 9.5, and it's about this 9.5 millimeter film, which is the first home movie film. It came out before Super 8. It came out before 16, and about this man in East Texas who wants to revive it.
It just seems magic to me that you can take these individual photographs and then in sequence and then project them, and you have motion all of a sudden. Let's say you were asking how I got interested in it, and I did find this book. This is what I remember reading years ago. So down here you have this little blurb about 9.5 millimeter, and it says, because the film and equipment are so rare, it is difficult to resist the view that this engaging and ingenious format is a doomed one. This is one of the original cameras. And so you can see how small that is. The film would basically already be looped from one, it's reel to reel. And of course you have to get your rhythm. I'm still closer to the older technology than some of the younger people these days. I do like the fact that it is mechanical, that you can see it working. The electronic or the digital technology, every, gosh, now, probably 2 or 3 years, there's something new and it's always changing, different format or a different type of equipment or a different standard for something. Film, it works for me. I like the feel of it, the mechanics of the camera, the whole process of making it, loading the camera, thinking about the exposure and so forth. There definitely is that time period between the time you shoot it and process the film and look at the negative when you're kind of holding your breath. It's just neat. The colors just explode on the screen. It's just indescribable. It's just fantastic to see that.
Okay, that was that. So I'm playing. That was that. Yeah. I'm gonna move along because we're running out of time. So I was happy with how that went. I was happy with the play with the form. I started to make shit up, and it felt good. It felt like the right thing to do. And so I started to play with truth, and I started to play with documentary. I'm documenting this guy and this event, but that stuff about Charles Pathé is completely made up. So with this film, I was invited to the Berlin Film Festival Talent Campus, and I went there, and that festival, and seeing films, documentary films that were sort of come from a sort of have a European sensibility, and they are sort of less... entertaining, they play with structure, there's a lot of observational work. It was very, very important to me. And particularly this one film, Sweetgrass, which is about this group, this herd of sheep that are being herded, is that the right word? Herded over these mountains in Wyoming. And that there's There's hardly any interview. There's no music. there's no like grand structure. There's no character development. There's none of these things. It's pretty just observational, and I loved it. And I decided I want to make films that I want to see. I want to make the type of work that I enjoy. That like when I'm sitting in that seat and I leave, I can't stop thinking about. So I also wanted to make a film about Savannah, Georgia, and Savannah, Georgia, to me represents, in lots of ways, represents the best and the worst of the South. The people are really friendly. The food is really good. The architecture and the landscape is gorgeous. It's segregated. It's completely segregated. It's Southern. It's homophobic. Like, I don't feel comfortable in that way there. So, but then I also thought back to Lesbian Grandmothers from Mars, and I was like, do I want to do a PBS? Do I want to tackle all of that? Am I capable of that? Is that a film that I want to watch? No. So I decided, how am I going to tell a story about Savannah from an interesting perspective? So I decided to do it from the perspective of a shrimp. And I'm going to show you this whole thing. This is my last film. It's my thesis film. It's my final film in graduate school. And it's 15 minutes. Okay. So that is my last film. I feel like I don't have much time left. Let me just talk briefly, very briefly, about my... I don't know how many of you went on the tour, but actually... Oh, that's where I'm from, the suburbs. these two quotes relate both to my films, the places that I'm moving into with film, but also with performance, and it's like looking at things in new and imaginative ways, the ways in which I had to do when I lived here in the suburbs. But I really love these quotes because how many colors are there in the field of grass to the crawling baby unaware of green? In the beginning, his mind, there are many possibilities, but the experts, there are few. So I started to do these performances. It really started out as a way to get my friends together in Austin during full moons when the weather was really nice and get people out, like get myself off of the computer and off of Facebook and blah and more and more stuff. And I wanted to have less. So I wanted to be away from media. And so I just started having these bike rides for my friends. And then I began to take on these different tour guide personas because I was really interested in tours and tourism and educational tours. And one of the experiences that I had was, this is not anyone I know, but this is two tourists in front of Lincoln's house. And I went to go visit Lincoln's house in Springfield, Illinois, a couple of years ago when I was making Lesbian Grandmothers from Mars, actually. And it was right around the time when this book came out, which sort of talks about Lincoln's supposedly, like, is he gay or... like, was his best friend really his lover? Was Mary Todd Lincoln a lesbian? All those things. And they, which I didn't necessarily need to hear that at this tour, but I felt like I realized that I would never hear that at this tour because his house is part of the National Park Service. But I wanted to. And so I started to give my own tours. And this time... we went into structures that were being built. Like in Austin, there's a lot of development for lofts and stuff. So we trespassed, I guess. And I started giving caves and mountain tours. So these were the caves. We were in the caves. There's another cave. See, they're posing for photos just like that. Those people were in front of Lincoln's memorial. And these are in places that are that are overlooked and unthought of. These are like this is the new landscape. This is Austin is becoming these things. And I also really, as a kid, I would go into these places, the new subdivisions that were being built. And so I wanted to experience that again. And I wanted my friends to, experience that because it's fun and you're not supposed to be there. And here's I'm really hurrying through this, but here's a brochure that I would make. There's all the stops that we made. I did in 9.5, I would just make stuff in. So the tour that I just gave was a mixture of fact and fiction. Because one of the things I want people to come away from it with is, I want to encourage like a critique of tours and tourism, and also, in myth maintenance. So I feel like there's a myth about this building, there's a myth about Tadeo Ando, there's a myth about Lincoln that is maintained by people who give the tours. And I wanted to encourage people to critique that. There we are at the Blanton Museum, which is in Austin. There's a Kiefer. There we are again. Here we are in Fort Worth. I took people underneath I-35, and we had a memorial to homeless homeless individuals who had died underneath the I-35. And here are some people in the audience are in this photo, as is some people in the audience. Partners' work is in the photo, and I told people that like the ghost of Judd or something was talking through this photo, so I had people listen to that. Okay, so I won't get into my photography because we're out of time. Yeah, Aaron? Okay. It's very brief. Again, I'm wanting to look at the ordinary and the overlooked, and I'm very interested in the built environment. And so this is a series of photos that I have. I'm going to have at a show at the Sofa Gallery in Austin at the end of October. And these are totally overlooked and underappreciated architectural elements from Austin. This is in Hyde Park. These are all Hyde Park apartments. And I think it's very interesting that the name of the structure and what the structure actually looks like. I'm very inspired by Ed Ruscha, and he did his photography of LA in the 1960s and 70s. The Jacksonian is very regal. Where I come from, things are called Misty Valley Estates, like subdivisions, but it's not an estate, it's not a valley, it's not misty. And I found this to be a Castle Arms Apartments. So this is just the El Dorado. And these are all being torn down eventually, I feel like, and will be replaced with lofts that are way more expensive. 12 Oaks, El Campo, the capital of Bolivia is right there, Pecan Walk. And then just one more series, VIP. You can be a VIP if you live there. I love that. Very important people live there. Act 7, I have no idea what that means. And then, oh, okay, that's it. Yeah. I thought I had another series in there, but no. That's it. Okay. So that is, that's it. I have no closing remarks. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Do we have time for questions?
Do we?
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Have you followed the work of Andre Frazier and think about that and your words and kind of how you think you differ from that or what you borrowed or maybe?
That's a great question. I find Andre Frazier to be really, to definitely an inspiration. And for inspiration for taking my tours from neighborhoods and the exterior environment to the interior, I really like how she goes about critiquing the institution of the museum. And at times, but she does it really well, and she does it really, I guess there's humor in it, but I feel like my personality and what I want to do is sort of inject like the way that I get people to think about the institution and to critique it and about myth-making and maintenance is I want to do it with humor and it's the way that I deliver it. But yeah, she's great. And I also, like, honestly, I have a book of hers and I've read her writings and I can't understand her. They're so inaccessible to me. So I feel like I've adopted my intelligence and the way that I want to critique things, my own sort of personality. Yeah. Yes?
Do you find yourself signing up for tours and going on tours just to see how I can
do it? Yes. Although I don't do it as much as I would like to now. But yeah, I do. And I remember, I feel like I was on a tour a lot when I was a kid, and they were boring. They were of like plantations and slave quarters and things in the South and like somebody who invented the cotton gin. And it was just like, it wasn't very interesting to me. But I feel like I started to notice the person who was giving the tour and sort of how they set the tone and how they created. How they were very much, like, they were very much a character, and they're, to me, as much part of the tour-going experience as the place and the facts and all of those things. So that's why I'm always why I sort of take on these personas. One time I was in Charleston, South Carolina with my mom, and this woman was, she was getting into her old homes, and she would show a flask, And she did not know what he knew, that she kept drinking and stuff. And she got better. She got more animated. She got funnier as she went along. So, yeah. Yes.
So I have a question. So what other, first of all, your tour today was awesome, and I loved how you seamlessly interweaved all sorts of facts and fiction together where you just couldn't even, I mean, it made me think about other tours I've been on and like, maybe they just made up stuff sometimes. But I was wondering what other sort of personas that you
So I have a Dave Leslie today was sort of a I don't know if this totally came out, but he's sort of like a repressed Texas Southerner. And I also have a man, Yuri, who you feel like I'm still working this one out because it's a little too complicated, but you're not quite sure if he has just, he's kind of sketchy, and you feel like he has just knocked off the tour guide and sort of like around his place and trying to like, he's just making stuff up and sort of looking around. And then I also want to do one dressed in drag. I'm not like somebody who like really has ever done that, but all of my friends do, but I want to do that because I feel like that's a whole other, like a something that I was exposed to in terms of tours that I want to do, and I feel like there's a whole range of jokes that can go with that. Yeah, and I've also, for the last few tours, I've had an intern, and she serves as the one, like at the museum, she serves as the one with all of the knowledge. She uses the big words. She's the one who says things about like Duchamp and Andre Fraser and all of these things. And I'm the one who like poo-poos that, so it's sort of like high and low. And we both kind of, yeah. Yes?
Do you think your family will ever re-emerge to their work?
That is an interesting question. I hope so, because one of the films that I started to work on, and I think that's why I sort of rejected humans being part of my films, is because this one film I was working on about my family didn't work out. It was about my relationship with my cousins in the KKK. Me as an openly gay man, and him as an openly Klansman. And he's agreed to it, and he's not agreed to it, and it just became really frustrating, so I sort of abandoned that. And I think that experience made me want to put humans in my family and maybe myself in the back. But that's an ongoing project. So yes, I think so. But I have to figure out what form that film is going to take. It may just take the form of photographs. It may take the form of a video projection. I feel like I was going at it sort of with, I got a little bit of PBS funding for it, and it didn't work out, and I felt like stuck, like I had to do it. I had to do interviews, I had to do music, I had to do it a certain way, and it just wasn't working. So we'll see.
Since you're engaging several different art forms now, I wonder if you feel frequently frustrated because you want to kind of do them all at once, but you can't. You have to focus on something and get it done and focus on something else. Or do you just go through periods where this is really what you want to do and you don't think about those other forms during that time?
That's a great question. I actually feel more comfort and less schizophrenic after I accepted the fact that I'm a filmmaker, then I'm a performer, and then I'm a photographer, versus only a filmmaker. And for example, my show in Austin is a photography show, but we're also going to explore the Hyde Park Apartments. So, it is frustrating, and sometimes I feel like it's hard for me to switch hats and to switch like, the way that I have to think about this and this and this. However, now that I just said that, I feel like in some ways the three forms are starting to merge, and they're like my last film was very like static. It was kind of sort of painterly. It was removed. So I would say yes. I would say yes. It's frustrating because it's sort of all over the place, and I want to be doing all those things. But that's my personality, and I try to accept that. But it's also in accepting that, it's also comforting to know that like that's sort of what I have to do. I don't have a choice. I do have a choice, but yeah. Is that a good question?
So happy is comfort.
Yeah, it's just how it is, you know? It does. Huh, I'm really thinking about that question.
Okay, so if we're done, after this, we're going to meet at Capitol Bar, which is across university. From the Eastside University behind Dos Gringos. Dos Gringos is having karaoke night tonight. So we're not going to go there. Unless you want to and you're more than welcome to go. But we can chat with Keith and have a drink. So Capitol Bar. And we'll go there directly after this. Thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for coming. Thank you.